Blog Talk Radio.
All around me are familiar faces.
Everybody, and welcome to the World of Ink Network here on Blog Talk Radio. Today's show is the What a Success Show with your host, Virginia S. Grenier, which is myself. Today is Wednesday. It is 6 p.m. Eastern Time. And before I jump into today's show, which is going to be full of lots and lots of information, I just need to quickly go over a little bit about what we do here at the World of Ink. For those who are new to the show as listeners, what the World of Ink Network is we are a Blog Talk Radio network with various shows throughout the week, and then we also talk a lot about book publishing, the writing industry. We do coaching, tours for authors who have new books being released, kind of a little bit of everything. And the best way to really find out more about us is going to worldofinknetwork.com, and you can see all the different things that we do. And then also for our listeners, just so you know about some of the upcoming shows that we have over the next few days, we have the Empowerment Show with Irene Roth. This is a new show for us, and she will be talking about the importance of empowering our teens and why parents need to help build those communication gaps between their kids, since as adults we didn't have social media network or the online influences that teenagers have nowadays. You can catch that show this Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. And then we also have another Anything Goes with Bennett Pomerantz. He was in the hospital, but he is back. So we are glad to see that he's back on his feet for this 90-minute show. It's an open discussion and chat. He will have 5 guests this Saturday on his show. And, of course, always welcome to join in the live chat room, call in, and, of course, join in the tweets that are happening during the show. And that is this Saturday at 9 p.m. Eastern. And then I will be back on the air again on Monday next week. I will be talking about summer reading programs on the Stories for Children show. And I actually will have joining me on that show Rebecca Kelly. She's the National Director of Achievement Gap Incentives for the YMCA. So that will actually be really be a fun show. We'll be talking about the different programs the Y offers, along with ways people who don't have a YMCA in their community can find programs that are like this for kids in the summer to keep them active and learning throughout the remaining summer weeks that we have in front of us, and, of course, the following summer. And if you missed it, Monday, Marcia Casper Cook and myself had Emma Dryden as a special guest on the World of Ink Network here, and we did a lot of talking about children's books, and just kind of the journey that authors need to go through, be it traditionally published, self-published, hybrid publishing. So you can catch the podcast. It's a featured show on the World of Ink Network, which is at blogtalkradio.com/World of Ink Network. And then jumping back to today's show, I'm excited because I actually have Tom Garrison joining me, and he's an author I have known for a number of years. We actually both live in the same area. And Tom recently did a workshop presentation at one of our chapter meetings for the Heritage Writers Guild, which is part of the League of Utah Writers, on guerrilla marketing. So I want to welcome Tom to the show.
Hi there.
You're so quiet, and I know you're more talkative than this normally. Now, you're an author, but I want you to share your background, because you're not a fiction author. You actually write in the nonfiction genre, and you actually write in the political realm which is, I think, the most deadly place to write as an author, because no matter what you do, someone's going to always want to, like, lynch mob you. So share your background.
A little story first, then I'll get into my background. Yeah, I write political essays, and I wrote two books, one on why people left the left to become libertarians, and another one was a memoir. And I've also written a lot of essays for a local newspaper and the Salt Lake Tribune. A few years ago, I wrote an essay for the Salt Lake Tribune about comparing cats and dogs as cats being libertarians and dogs being liberals, and the different traits of these. And by the way, I love both animals, and I've had both all my life, so I don't hate dogs or cats. But I went on this and made all these analogous situations between the way cats behave and the way dogs behave. And I'm a libertarian now, and I was a socialist for a long time, but not anymore. So this was published in the Salt Lake Tribune a couple years ago, and I had some of the most scathing attacks. As people say that I didn't know anything in the world about dogs or cats, and I sure as hell didn't know anything about liberalism. You're right. Writing nonfiction, particularly a lot of political things, it can be a little dicey, and you got to have a thick skin because people are going to attack.
Yeah, and you live in Utah, where it's primarily Republican based on top
right.
of it.
Yeah, and being a libertarian in Utah is kind of odd because, you know, on some issues and economic kinds of questions, I would side with Republicans on things. But on other issues, like if people want to smoke pot or, you know, if they want to marry, you know, two guys want to marry or two guys, I don't care. Who cares?
Mm-hmm.
So that doesn't go over real well. But, you know, that's where I am politically, and I think it's a good place for me. So that's what I do. On my background, my wife and I, Deb, we moved here about 4.5 years ago from Santa Barbara, California, another one of those little people's republics of Santa Barbara. And one of the main reasons we moved here is there's several, but one of them was we just love the outdoors and desert hiking. It's another thing I've taken up over the last few years is writing hiking stories for the local newspaper. They're published once a month. So we love that here, and we were a little, I don't know, an apprehensive, too strong of a word, but a bit of a concern moving to the mothership of Mormonism. I'm an atheist. My wife is a good Methodist, so we have a mixed marriage. But living here, it's been fine. There's been absolutely no problems. I think I've met more ex-Mormons than current ones. So...
We get along great, and we joke around great, and of course all my listeners are probably laughing because they're going, and Virginia's LDS, and Virginia tends to be more Republican than anything. However, I'm very open-minded, and I'm from California, too, so.
Wait a second, you're LDS?
Yeah. See, you didn't even know.
I didn't know that. Yep. Oh, okay.
Yes, see, I'm not crazy like a lot of them. See, there's a difference.
No. I mean, even the crazy ones are fun. I mean, it's part of the social milieu in which we live and, you know, enjoy it.
I always joke with everybody. I said there's California Mormons and then there's the Utah Mormons.
and what's the difference? I've heard that.
Yeah. I live here. I don't want a lunch mob outside my door, so I'm not going to say. Are you insane? There's a difference. I'll tell you one day when I'm not live on the air. How about that?
That sounds fine.
But, yeah, no, and Santa Barbara is such a beautiful place. And trust me, I mean, I went to college in San Diego. I grew up along Orange County and L.A. County and spent many times up in Santa Barbara. I actually went to Pismo Beach for a few years
and went to
high school there. So coming into southern Utah where it's red dirt, it's definitely a
change. I agree. Red dirt is just magnificent. I mean, Santa Barbara is also a great place to live if you can get past the politics and things of the whole state.
Yeah.
But this is just as attractive in its way. And if you're desert rats like my wife and I are, this is the place to be. It's just wonderful.
Yeah, well, my husband's a desert rat. That's one reason why we're here. By the way, I used to joke, and I will say this because it's not a big deal if I say this live on air because I've made comments enough times, but I used to always tell people that the only way I'd ever move to Utah is if someone shot me and dragged my dead body across the borderline. So the fact that I'm here and breathing is pretty significant.
How long have you been here?
I have been here 10 years. I thought you've been here as long as I have. Gosh, I didn't realize
I've been
here longer than you. Yeah, I've been
twice
here longer.
As long. Yeah.
Well, I'm on 10 years now, but I love it. And it's funny because you would think the majority of my friends, being as you said, in a Mormon populated state, would all be LDS, and I have more non-member friends than member friends.
Yeah,
and that's okay.
Well,
I like it that way.
My wife and I, you know, we're pretty active. We do hiking, and I volunteer at PAWS, providing animals with support.
Mm-hmm.
We do senior game stuff and senior bowling and things. And the Mormons are, it doesn't matter. We may yet to have any kind of a confrontation or problem or anything with it. So it's almost like it really is a non-issue. You know, if you're a young person and you want to go bar hopping, those sort of things, St. George is not the place to live. But if you're an old, tired old guy like I am, this is beautiful.
No, and you're right, and which was always my fear, which is why I never wanted to live here. This is one thing I can say, because I have an aunt who lives up north in the Salt Lake
mm-hmm.
Valley, and I spent a summer there, and it just seemed like everybody on her street was in her ward, in her, you know, at her time to church. So everybody knew everybody's business, and that was one of my big reasons but never wanted to move here. And you're right, in southern Utah, it's very much a non-issue. Not everybody's into each other's business as much as you would think. Now, I know up north, that's not as bad anymore. And they actually have bars up north, so if you are young and want to move to Utah, move to Salt Lake Valley, you can go
well,
bar
more
hockey.
Than that, I don't know how you stand on the gay rights issue, but I attended my first two women marrying each other in the mid-90s.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Salt Lake City is ranked one of the 10 best places for gay couples to live, and according to, like, The Advocate, which is a gay newspaper. So it's
mm-hmm.
amazing that, you know, the large urban areas are pretty much like large urban areas anywhere.
Yeah. Well,
I don't think
and
it's all
I have,
that special.
I have a lot of friends, and some of them recently I didn't even know were. And even though I've known them for years, that
they're gay?
Yeah, I had no idea. I have two friends who are lesbian. You know,
uh-huh.
they don't know each other. They're like two separate people, live in two different areas. But I've known them for like 10 years and just found out both of them were. And I was like, oh, I had no clue. You know, not that, you know, like they, not like a bi. But I mean, I worked in fashion for so long that generally I can usually kind of tell.
A gaydar.
Yeah, no, well, when you're in fashion, two things happen when you work in fashion. You either know if someone's Jewish or if you know someone's gay, because that's, and I'm not saying it's dominated by that, but most people are usually one or the other in the industry, and so, yeah.
You sure you want to go there, Virginia?
I keep my word. I've talked about Marsha and I joke about that all the time. He's actually listening to me, my cohort here at the World of Ink Network. I should probably bring her in. She's probably cracking up at me. Anyhow, you know, to me, which is what my faith teaches, we're here for, you know, to make choice, personal decisions, and we're judged
mm-hmm.
on that. So to each their own is how I view it.
Well, good for you. Yeah.
It's not my choice, but if someone else, I mean, if my kids came up and said that to me, I'd be like, you know what? I love you anyways. You know, it's
okay.
Your life. You're happy.
Yeah,
well, let's talk about guerrilla marketing as everybody's learning more about my life. This is what happens when I bring people on. I know I start talking about my life. Well, you just recently, two months ago. I think it was, because we're in July. So it was the June, because I went to that meeting. It was the June
mm-hmm.
meeting that we had here at the Heritage Writers Guild, and you did a whole presentation on guerrilla marketing, which I was being really good, not trying to open my mouth up too much, because you know me, I'm like, oh, let me interject. And I really liked it because you covered a lot of significant things that, even if you're not a writer, if you're someone who's trying to start up your own publishing house, already have a publishing house, be it a self-publisher, hybrid, small publisher, or even if you're just someone who's starting up your own business in general, you can use a lot of these tips anyways.
Oh,
and you really
exactly.
hit on things that and you hit on things that it was great watching the members of our writing community, how many of them, even though this is stuff that they've heard individually, that when they heard it all together, they're like, oh, that makes sense. And you're going, but you've heard this before. And it's funny. It's like, and I think it's like when you put it all together, like you did in your, like, in your presentation, it's like hearing it all together, you finally go, oh, this is how I'm supposed to be doing my stuff. Because it is
right.
overwhelming. There is so many different things out there. And I remember you even mentioning, like, I'm sure I'm missing stuff because there's so much, you know, things that you can do. But I would love for you to share what guerrilla marketing is, because I'm sure people are like, you know, what am I doing, beating people over the head and saying, buy my book, because I'm told not to do that, which is true. And that's not exactly what it is.
No, it's not. The analogy comes from, we're all somewhat familiar, I think, throughout history of guerrilla warfare, where there's kind of an asymmetrical battle going on between a conventional army, which has tons of resources, deep pockets, and guerrilla forces, which don't. And guerrilla marketing takes its cue from that, in that if you're a self-published author, an independent author, which, you know, probably 95 out of 100 authors are nowadays, there's so many people that are publishing their own stuff, you don't have the deep pockets that traditional publishers do have. You just don't. And so you're going to have to do all the marketing yourself. And I'm an independent publisher. I self-publish my own books. So I know this from personal experience. But from what I hear from folks who have a traditional publisher, they have to end up doing the vast majority of the marketing anyway. So if you have a contract with a traditional publisher, or if you're an indie author like most of us are, you're going to have to be doing this stuff. And if you've written a book, if you've gone that far and you've got it published, you've already shown, you know, initiative and persistence, that you can stick with something, you can start something, stick with it, get it finished, get it published. And that's, you got to keep that in mind, this guerrilla marketing, that those are the main characteristics you got to have. You really have to have. And I think some people maybe lose that. Once you've got the book done, you think, oh, I'm done. Well, I'm sorry. Once you've got your book published, basically you're just starting. I had my first book published, that was 2 years ago, in July of 2012. And I'm still doing marketing things. So it doesn't ever end. But it's the kind of things that you can do without having deep pockets, because most of us don't have deep pockets. But they can be successful. And if you don't do these things, maybe not all of them, but if you don't do the majority of them, I can pretty much guarantee that you're going to have sales near zero. I mean, you may have sold to a few friends and family, but that's about it.
Yeah,
you
and
have
that's true,
to do
and
these
I know.
Sort of things.
Yeah, and so true, because I mean, obviously, you know, you and I go to a lot of the same, you know, book festival. We were just talking about the book festival actually before the show started. That
right.
That I'm the director of and help put together down here in St. George, Utah. And I mean, but you and I have gone to a lot of different things, like in Mesquite and around, you know, just in general,
right.
trying to promote our work. So I know you're very, very, you know, dedicated to this type of thing. And you're right. One thing Marcia and I talk about, Marcia Casper-Cook, I don't know if you remember me ever mentioning her name before. I know I've mentioned it a few times at meetings for the Heritage Writers Guild, but she's a signatory agent, a script writer, and an author out of Chicago.
Okay.
She's my partner at the World of Ink Network. And, you know, she's on the agent side of things, the same people get contracts, and they're thinking, oh, well, these people are going to do all this marketing for me because I'm traditionally published. And, you know,
yeah.
that advance check that you get, guess what it goes to? It's going to your marketing because, well, I mean, they're already taking a risk on you anyways. And,
exactly.
and I think most people miss that point, that the whole advancement check is to help you get kickstarted into getting the marketing and the frameworks. I mean, half the time when you send a proposal, it asks you, what are you going to do marketing-wise? That's part of your package
oh, yeah.
of why they should take your book. I think authors go ahead.
When I shopped around, well, both my books, I tried to get them traditionally published. When I shopped them around, you know, you query the agent, various, you know, hundreds in my case. And if they showed any interest, you know, I had a whole outline of everything that I would do, you know, personal appearances and radio and TV shows I could do. And marketing took up a big part of the full proposal that I would give them. And marketing is a huge part of it. I mean, look, if you were going to write something, and unless you're doing it just for your own edification, and that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But most of us want to make some money off of it. And if you don't do this marketing, you're just not going to. Now, you may not anyway, but you're certainly not going to if you don't try to do the kinds of marketing that are low or no cost and just take a lot of persistence on your part.
Well, and honestly, you shared during our presentation, you know, you found this on LinkedIn from Ian McKenzie, who's the author of Clouds in the Wind. And I loved that in the second paragraph of what he had to say in this little, you know, few paragraphs of information about guerrilla marketing. I mean, he put in there writing a book is like starting your own business. And I think that's where a lot of the disconnect happens is my husband does it all the time. He always like, oh, you know, your hobby. And I'm looking, I'm going, this isn't a hobby. If it was a hobby, I'd just be writing and taking my time. I mean, and you can be a hobby writer. That's a writer. But if you really want to be an author, an official author, you know, like you said, you have to complete the book, and then you have to invest in. I mean, even if you're going to go traditional route, you still have to invest in what you're going to be doing, be that, you know, some of the marketing, whatever. I mean, there's still an investment involved, which is what small business is. And I would like for you to kind of talk about some of the things.
Oh, sure.
Obviously, you need to. So I know you need to get prepared. You need to have your completed book.
Right. One of the things I stressed at this PowerPoint presentation was, and it was amazing when I was talking about this, some people had kind of blank looks, and I'm just going, wow, this is, you know, marketing 101. You should definitely do this. Is just have a press release. Have a basic press release together. That's, you know, title of your book, obviously, and where it can be purchased, and the price, and the ISBN, those sorts of things. Any quotes you may have from pre-publication reviews or early on when you're selling it, quotes from reviews. You just ought to have a kind of a boilerplate press release that you can manipulate. You can change the introductory paragraph when you're sending it to certain kinds of people, change different parts of it, but have something together. Also include, I mean, these are obvious, but I got blank looks on some of this. It was amazing. You know, include links to the book's website and probably Amazon, which seems to sell about 90% of e-books nowadays, where it can be purchased. A JPEG file, the image of your book cover, I mean, you got to have that. Also said, I mean, if you happen to be an attractive person, you probably a JPEG file of yourself. I don't have to worry about that one, but other people
may. Your
picture's
up, by the way, today. I was going to say, and your picture up with your cat is up on our site today.
Oh, it is? Oh, cool.
Yes, it is.
That's
what
not
you look
just
like.
Any. Yeah, that is Dave the Wonder Cat, by the way. So, look, the first thing you got to have really is a press release, and you can easily modify that to suit different audiences. One of the other things I talk about is I've lived in, I don't know, like a half dozen, well, not even that many, four different places in my life for any extended period of time. And each one of those places, I sent a press release when my books came out saying, you know, my years in any town, USA, were useful for this reason or helped form me in a certain way or whatever. You know, I went to undergraduate school or graduate school, that sort of thing. But you have some kind of introductory hook that hooks them, that ties me to that town. So I can have my basic press release, but then change the first paragraph or so and explain why this book is important for people in Davis, California, which is one of the places I live, why this is important for you to review this book or interview me, that sort of thing. When you send out another thing that I talked about quite a bit is, for me it was easy. Maybe a little bit more difficult for people who write fiction, but affinity groups and community organizations. Like for me, I'm a libertarian. So when I wrote this book that was people and why they left the left, why they became libertarians, I spent months gathering the email addresses of every Libertarian Party in every state, of every student libertarian group I could find, every prominent libertarian in the country, more than 300 what I thought might be from their curriculum vitas, professors who might have libertarian leanings, you know, hundreds of names, and compiled this gigantic email list and sent them out the press release when that book came out. If you're writing, you know, fiction, maybe yours is gothic fiction, you know, Google that, and you could probably find, you know, 100 different groups of people that are interested in one way or another in gothic fiction. Get those email addresses. This is something that you just do. I mean, I do this all constantly. I constantly get email addresses and names of organizations and individuals who I think may be interested in my books. For example, I'm writing a hiking book now, all the hiking stories I've had published while I was here in St. George. Mm-hmm. And in the last couple of months, anytime I come across the Wilderness Society or I Love Hiking Southern Utah or Audubon Society, whatever, any kind of nature, conservation, outdoorsy, hiking organization, I'm compiling an email list of those groups. So when my hiking book is done, I will already have people who have an affinity for what I do, have some kind of commonality, they're going to be hit with the press release. This is another one of the things that you just have to do. And even fiction, say you write thrillers, you know, go to, what's the guy's name who, Tom Clancy?
Yes.
He must have 100 websites. That, you know, piggyback off of that. Post things on Tom Clancy's Facebook page or website. Do those sorts of things. You got to be creative about this, and it really is a lot of work. But once you get these email lists together of groups that have some sort of commonality with what you're writing about, you're always going to have them. So when your second and third and fourth and fifth book comes out, if they're in the same genre, you've already got people that you can send out. Basically what it is spam. I don't like to say that, but that's what it is. But it's spam that – but I'm sending out, you know, my hiking book when that comes out to organizations which are about the outdoors. So it's spam, but in a way they might be interested. They should be interested.
Right, and it's not spam in a bad way. I mean, you're trying to reach out and let people know, be aware of it, and which I totally understand, because when I used to run my magazine Stories for Children, which was an online magazine, you know, I had built up a very big contact list.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, a few years later, it's been 3 years now, when my picture book came out, Babysitting Sugar Paw, the first thing I did was contact all of my subscribers to my magazine and said, hey,
you know,
you love my magazine. Here's, you know, I just want to know that I have written a picture book and I'm going to be releasing. Just wanted to let, you know, just really simple. And then, you know, obviously I tied something about the magazine into it too, since I was the owner, you know, the founder of the magazine, so I could do that.
Right.
It didn't look like I was, like, spamming them. But I also reached out because it was based off babysitting, hence the name Babysitting Sugar Paw, a lot of the babysitting groups that are out there.
I was really excited
because Dixie Community Ed, through our university out here, they have
the
kid time or tot time or whatever they call it. They actually, because I'd got, without knowing it, contacted one of the people who oversaw their little preschool kind of program, ended up buying a whole bunch of my books to have there for the kids, and I was like, you know, you just need to have them.
Okay, kudos for you, Virginia. That's exactly what a guerrilla marketer does. I mean, that's exactly what you do. Something I was reading, just a couple of days ago, some guy was talking about, you know, again, an aspect of guerrilla marketing, is tying your book into current events. Like if you wrote a diet book, and there's all kinds of studies that are always coming out about, you know, obese America and that sort of thing. Well, when you write your press release or further press releases or just notices you put on Facebook or Google Plus or whatever, you know, tie in this study, talks about how people in this age cohort are very obese. And my diet nutrition book talks about how you can maybe end that. Is that you tie whatever your book is about into, you know, current events or interests that are wider than just your book. That sort of thing is another part of it. A lot of this is just being creative. Just think of ways to reach people that might have or should have some sort of interest in what you're writing about.
Well, what are you gonna say?
Some of the other things I just wanted to bring up real quick is, and these, again, are real obvious, but that people who, again, who are in the guerrilla marketing situation, which I think most of us are, you know, you got to, you know, go to the bookstores and book fairs, and you'd mentioned that we'd been, you know, together, you know, attending the same local book fairs, and we've done that. You have to do those sort of things. It's just a way, even if you don't sell many books, hopefully you will, but if you don't, you're going to meet other authors, you're going to expand your connections, the community of writers, and that's always a good thing. I always send out the press releases to every local media outlet, particularly local ones. They should be interested in what local authors are doing. You see those in your local newspaper, online newspapers all the time, so do that too. I also send them out, the press releases, to regional newspapers. Now, this is more dicey, and unless you're really lucky, it's probably not going to happen. But once you've got the press release together, sending an email with the press release, just modifying it a little bit so it fits whatever audience you're trying to address, is no big deal. But I send them out to you know, the Salt Lake Tribune, which is a major, large regional newspaper, the New York Times, Los Angeles Times, you know, a select few national media outlets. And, you know, maybe lightning will strike and they'll decide to do a review of the book or an interview with me, that sort of thing. Another one, this one, is don't forget the other organizations you belong to in your life, like alumni associations. I belong to three of them at three different colleges. And I sent them a, you know, a short press release with a JPEG image of my cover of the book, of both my books, and they ran them in all three of the Alumni Association newsletters. They've always had some little blurb, you know, our alumni from this year wrote this book, and they have a little picture of the book cover and that sort of thing. Maybe it won't do much good, maybe it will. But it's out there, and somebody might remember you, or just or flipping through the Alumni Association newsletter or magazine, might say, "Oh, that sounds interesting." You never know. And once you get the basics down, I can't repeat this so many times. Once you get the basic press release and you start building up your mailing list, and those sorts of things. Once you have all that done, it's really simple just to send these out to different organizations and groups you have some sort of commonality with. You know, you went to university there. These are, again, no cost, and they may reach certain kinds of audiences.
Yeah, and, you know, I never, when you mentioned the alumni thing during the meeting, I remember thinking, I never even thought of that. That was one that completely escaped my brain until I heard you say that. But you also mentioned, which is really funny, because you're not the only one who does this. Dave Smith in our group does this as well. But having a box of your books with you, like in your car, in the trunk of your car.
Yeah.
Can't tell you how many authors don't do that.
You're serious about that? You know that people just don't carry them around with them?
I most authors I know do not. There's very few that I know that do. Like, I know you do, and I know Dave does. I got better after being around you guys about doing it myself because I wasn't doing it. I know Marcia does.
Look,
like Tracy,
and this is,
Tracy doesn't carry her books around.
This is, if you get a small box, you put a half dozen copies of your book or two books or however many books you got, and I've sold books at, like I mentioned earlier, I volunteer at PAWS, Providing Animal Support. It's a nonprofit, non-governmental animal shelter here in St. George. And I sold a couple of my books there, and it's not that I was being pushy with people and you're here to buy my book, but it just comes up, you're just chatting with folks, and they ask what you do or something. It comes to the conversation, well, I wrote a book, and they go, well, what was it? And you go out and get it and show them a copy, hey, I want to buy that. And I've sold copies at the Senior Bowling, which we do. So you never know, and you don't have to be pushy, but don't be – it's kind of a fine line. You don't want to be pushy and turn people off, and you probably won't have many friends. But on the other hand, you don't want to be so shy and so reticent about talking about your work that you miss opportunities. I mean, do not miss opportunities. And in that same vein, another thing is that if you sell a book to someone you know, or some acquaintance or whatever, Always ask them to write a review. If they bought an e-book, ask them to write a review. And most of them won't, but if they do, having 10 or more reviews on Amazon lends a certain kind of legitimacy to your book. I mean, maybe it's not justified, but that's just the way the world is. So always ask people for reviews. It doesn't hurt. The worst they're going to say is, nah, I don't have time. That's another no-cost guerrilla marketing, in a sense, is asking for reviews. Jesse Unruh, who's a Democratic politician in the 60s and 70s in California, he said, money is the mother's milk of politics, and I think we just see that more and more each decade. Reviews are the mother's milk of an author, of book promotion. You know, they are what really makes it go. If you can cite a few reviews that are great, I got a unsolicited, someone just bought one of my books, and this is probably a month ago, and occasionally I'll check on Amazon for any new reviews. And this one was particularly nice, and this happened to be somebody I didn't know. I mean, my goodness, a stranger wrote a pretty nice review. And so I just get up a little note and put that on my Facebook page for myself and for my book and for the websites that I have on Google+, on LinkedIn, on all these different kinds of social media networks, put that notice. Now, I don't know if that generated any sales. It's hard to tell because you put something up, and maybe you get, you know, half a dozen sales that week that you can track. You don't know if it was because of what you did or just coincidence. But if you don't do it, you're probably not going to get those sales. So this is the kind of, again, it's the kinds of things you have to do.
Yeah, and I was saying that's a great way of letting people know, look, you know, someone read my book and this is what they had to say and they really liked it without saying, buy my book.
Exactly.
It's a nice way of not saying buy my book, but you're still implying maybe you might want to buy my book. And you know, it's funny you made, and what's funny about you bringing up that you never know when a situation may happen. And I know we were talking before the show because you didn't realize because I've been working now part time for a year out of the house, which you didn't know. And I'm sure you're still going like, you really need more stuff to do, because I do, Tom. I need more stuff. But I work at a thankless job. I work at a place where we dispatch taxis on the East and West Coast. That's what I do. I do it between 15 to 25 hours. We dispatch taxis on the East and West Coast.
Oh, really?
So I'm like,
from here?
Yeah. So like Orange County, LA County, Charlotte area. We now have Austin, Texas. Yeah, it's like Nashville. Yeah, nowhere in Utah. But I work late at night because I'm a night owl, so I do it late at night when my husband's home and the kids are in bed. And but one of the people that I actually went through training with a year ago, we were talking, and I was on my break, and I was just kind of working on some outlining for my books. That's the other reason why I do it, because it's a place where I can get away from the home and clear my head. Yes, having people yell at me that their taxi isn't there for whatever reason helps clear my head, but it does. It gives me a lot of material for books, so I can't tell you. But I was outlining this idea for a book, and this lady that I trained with a year ago was sitting next to me, and, you know, the calls weren't coming in, so she had time to, like, ask how I was doing, and she saw what I, and then she also was doing, she was like, oh, are you working on your book? And I said, yeah, and then she asked me if I had any published, because it's not like you get to really talk to people too much when you're, like, on the phone with customers.
Right.
And I mentioned my picture book. And she's like, oh, do you have one here? And, of course, I didn't have one, like, in my bag,
oh,
you know, to give her.
Yeah.
But she was, I mean, I didn't. Because when I go to work, I leave all my writing stuff pretty much at home. So I didn't have any on me. But she was interested. And I was like, you know, that was an opportunity right then and there. And I missed it.
Right.
So you're right.
Yeah.
You never
know.
And, I mean, she was asking me. I didn't even make the conversation go that way. It was totally, she steamed it that way. And.
No, yeah, that's the best one, when someone says, well, you know, what are you working on now? They may know you're an author or along those lines, and then you can just throw in that, you know, you have something new that's published or has been out a while. Maybe they hadn't heard about it, that sort of thing. Yeah. You have to do that. another thing is have freebies. Everybody loves, I mean, I love getting free things. Jeez. I have business.
And I know that was a hot topic that night too, because I know that a lot of people sit on the fence about, do I do freebies or do I not do freebies? That's always a huge debate in the writing world.
Well,
what is
look,
that one?
Look, like I mentioned in freebies, like business card, bookmarks, gold coins, whatever. If you can give out the latter, you're probably going to get a lot of book sales because people are going to feel guilty about taking some gold coin from you. But most of us can't do that, so it's going to be bookmarks, business cards. I have those, and I carry them in my wallet. And like at the bowling alley, there are my business cards up on, they have those big poster boards, and you can put stuff up there, my business card. Any place I go where I see, you know, free advertising, you know, it's all over the place, and there's, you know, you get a push pin, just put your books in there. And again, maybe that won't result in any sales, or perhaps it might. You probably can't track that, but it costs you almost nothing other than 10 seconds. And business cards are going to cost you 30 or 40 or 50 bucks, but you're going to have them for a long time unless you're just handing them out like crazy. And they're a way to remind people who you are and what you're doing. It is, I think it just adds a little bit more legitimacy, too, to an independent author.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about one of the biggest things that's going on with authors is, you know, everybody's doing the whole, do I get a blog, should I have a blog
mm-hmm.
and a website, should I just do a website, should I just do social media pages? I mean, now you can have your fan page on Facebook. I know Google
right.
Plus is doing the same thing. So I know
right.
the online which unfortunately, you have to be online in some degree if you're going to be an author. That's a given. But what's your thought on the different types of online? Because there's so many options now.
And
doing it all is very overwhelming, I know, because Marsha and I do that already.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'll start with the non-controversial stuff, and then I'll get into blogs, which I have mixed feelings about. But in, you know, the social media, you know, Facebook, you can, you know, have a page for yourself as an author and one for each of your books, and you can do that very simply. All these things are very simple to do, too. And whenever you have, whenever, you know, you get a good review of your book or something that's maybe not directly related to your book, I upload my hiking stories on my book pages. So, you know, figuring, it's kind of keeping people in the loop and what I'm doing. They may have, I mean, everybody loves the outdoors, right? So even political people. So perhaps there's some interest there. And I don't push the book at all. I just say, here's a neat hike we went on, and here's the published story about it. So there's, you know, you want to update those at least periodically to have generate some interest in what you're doing on Facebook. And there's another thing, is always like your own post. I mean,
I still don't do all mine, by the way.
I mean, if you don't like it, you know, who else is going to? Google Plus is another one that's, I don't think, nearly as popular as Facebook, but it has a certain reach. And again, it's free, doesn't cost anything. It's easy to set up a page there. So do that. Twitter, I registered for Twitter, but I actually never use it. If you're a registered user, you can send these, what's limited to 140 characters, messages. If you're not a registered user, you can just view messages. Maybe it's my age or something. I just never got into the Twitter thing. Some people swear by it. Again, it's easy. But to me, I don't know. It seems too easy and there's no substance there. But that's just my own bias. So Twitter is another place where people can do the social media outreach. And one that maybe you actually gave me some good ideas when during my presentation. And it might have been you or someone else that mentioned Pinterest. And I looked into that, and I've joined now. And, again, I'm not sure exactly how useful it'll be compared to Facebook or even Google+. It's not much. But it's free. You might as well do it. So I have an account there now, and I've pinned some of my own stories and my own books and trying to give them a little bit more exposure. I mean, exposure is what this all is about. On blogs, like I said, I have really mixed feelings. You got to have a website, and I think you you have a preference for one that you said is, many of them are free. You can just, like, you know, how can I get a free website and Google that and find places.
I've worked with a lot of different websites, and as you know I'm the website, like, promoter,
right.
and that everybody needs to have a website, be it. I know a lot of, and the reason why people have a hard time with the website is like, well, what happens if I read a bunch of books on my website? I don't want to maintain all these websites for my books. So that's the biggest thing you have to decide. Do you want an author website, or you can have a website for each book? Now, I think if you have a series, like I think of Dave Smith with the Hidden Mickey series.
Right.
He should have, which he does not, but he should have, a website for the Hidden Mickey series itself, along with his own personal website. I'm only writing picture books. So for me to have a website for each picture book, it's a picture book. It doesn't make sense. So I have my author website.
Links to the books. Sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, and because of that, I mean, obviously I do the Heritage Writers Guild website. I do the St. George Book Festival website. I maintain our World of Ink Network website. I do a lot of websites, guys.
That's a lot.
I do, and I have the Stories for Children magazine website as well, and I think there's one other that I can't think of off the top of my head. But anyways, I have websites galore. Anyhow, and I love doing them, and I've used a lot of different people. The one that I like using because it's just easy, it doesn't take me long, and what I like most, too, is I can make changes and
mm-hmm.
save those changes, but it doesn't publish it where it doesn't go live. So
okay.
I use Tripod. It's tripod.com.
Yeah, I think you mentioned that. Right.
Yeah, I prefer them for that reason because I can, if I want to, like right now, the Stories for Children website is very outdated because it's from when the magazine was live, so it just has that the magazine's closed and that we're going to be making updates to the site. I have been
mm-hmm.
working on it for the last 6 months, behind the scenes, a whole new layout, but no one can see it because I can save those changes and come back and work on it without
going
published live, and that I like.
That's very useful.
There's a lot of sites that, you know, and for $5 a month, you can have one simple web page for yourself, and I think it's like $12 to buy your domain name, so you have a personalized domain name if you would like.
Right.
And so, you know, but like I have the web creator level, so I pay a lot more a year because I have multiple websites through my account. But, you know, or you can do it fully free and not pay and have advertising on your site too.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's another one of those things that the initial investment in money is really minimal at all, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And there's going to be a certain investment in time, but after you've got it set up, you can do what you're talking about is, you know, you can modify it in various ways and, you know, try new things out, and when you get a new book or a new published article or whatever, you can announce that. It's really important.
And you can link it, if you do have a blog, you can link them, because like our World of Eat Network site, my website, and like Heritage Writers Guild, because we actually have a Heritage Writers Guild blog, I have it linked directly to the St. George Book Festival website. You can build in those affiliated links to other things, like your Facebook pages, your Twitter account, those things onto websites. So someone doesn't have to jump everywhere to try and find you. To me, a website is like your online press kit. It's how I look at a website. You know, and I know you're torn about blogs. I think, at least this is my opinion. I know we talked about this.
I want to hear this.
I think if you're not somebody who wants, see, you do a lot of writing. I mean, you write for the local papers. You do a lot of that kind of stuff already. So to me, I'm like, do you really need a blog? No, because you're already out there in basically, you know, the pure article type market, writing columns. If you're not doing that, like I don't. Like I don't do that anymore. I've stepped away from the magazine industry because I used to do that for the children's market. But I stepped away from it. So I have blogs, but I use my blogs like my Writing Mama blog that's tied to this show. I post, of course, when I'm having a show and about my guests. I do author interviews on Fridays, which, yes, I will have you eventually do one of those. I'm getting through people as quickly as I can. But every Friday, I have, like, Interview Friday. So it's an interview that I've done with an author that I post on there. That's a written interview. You know, like, I'll post updates of myself. So I think you have to, if you want to do a blog, you have to make sure you know what the blog's going to be about and stick to it and somehow tie it into whatever it is you're doing. Otherwise, I think it's pointless.
Yeah, and like I said, I have mixed feelings about this because I'm just wondering, and you're so active that I don't think it would be much of a problem for you, but a lot of people, you know, if you write one book every year or two, and if you don't have write for periodicals or do other kinds of work, can you add things to your blog every, you know, couple or 3 or 4 weeks? Because if you don't, it's going to really get stale. Mm-hmm. And that's going to interest people, that isn't too pushy and isn't too off topic. Can you do that, first of all? Is it going to accomplish anything? And that's, you know, so that's very subjective. I mean, my wife, Deb's cousin in San Francisco, is an indie author, and he swears by his blog. But his blog is very good. Once a month he'll write something that's, the topics are kind of somewhat related to his books, but they're well-researched, they're not too long, they're great. I can see his, but his is very professional, very well done. But I just wonder if people get into a blog and then after 4 or 5 months, when the bloom's off of it, you know, you're just going to maybe start putting things up there about what your cat did today. And I love cats, but yeah, I'm probably not going to go to a blog to check that out.
Do you
have a sense of, and it's subjective, but do they work?
Well, and that's what I'm saying. It's like when I started my Writing Mama blog, that was the first blog I ever started that I wasn't sure about. And I decided, well, you know, I'm going to talk about the fact that I'm a mom and I have 3 kids and what it's like trying to make time for writing. And that's how my blog first started, because I wasn't doing radio shows at the time.
Uh-huh.
And then, of course, once I teamed up with Marcia and I, you know, her and I started, you know, I started being her co-host on shows, and then eventually started the World of Eat Network, and I have my Monday show named after my blog. You know, it just segued into what it is now. I have another blog called The Family Matters Blog, which is now tied to World of Ink as well, because it was a Family Matters show. But it was also tied to Stories for Children magazine website, and it was a place
You're
for
a
parents
busy
to
kid.
Tips. I am. Where they could get tips. So it was all parenting tips. You know, there'd be, you know, YA to picture book, you know, reviews on there as
right.
well. You know, and that's the thing. I think it goes back to what you're saying about, you know, the other blog you were talking about. You have to somehow segue it into whatever you're currently doing and be diligent enough to where at least, you know, you're updating it every few weeks with something. And there's times
right.
where I'm busy and I'm working on something and I don't have, like, you know, when October hits, I'm not going to have time. But because I'm aware of that and I know I'm going to be busy at that time, I'm already lining up where I'm going to have book festival.
Yeah.
I will have stuff that I will have accumulated beforehand and ready to go, scheduled to post on certain days. So in October, when I'm not really looking at the blog or sharing the blog post because I won't have time, things
mm-hmm.
will at least be updating, and then I can go back later and say, I don't know if you caught this. You know, I was busy, but this was a really good article. It was up on my blog, you know, a few weeks ago. Wanted to share it now because I'm back in town or whatever, and then I can do that.
Right.
So I think you have to be vested in it is what it comes down to, I think, when it comes
and,
to
and. And doing a blog, most of the things I've talked about, once you've invested the initial time in setting up Facebook or different social media or writing your press releases, all these sort of things, once you've invested the initial time, anything else you do is pretty quick and easy. I mean, it's really not much. But a blog, if you want it to remain high quality, you're going to have to actually put some time and effort into it. It just doesn't take care of itself. And I don't know. I've seen no studies, so I have no hard data whatsoever. But I'm just skeptical on how many people maintain a high-quality blog for any length of time. And to me, it just becomes writing for writing's sake, just because you got to get something out there.
And you're right. There's very many that very few blogs out there that I think have maintained that. One of the places
it's hard.
Yeah, it is hard,
yeah.
And here's a prime example. I'm actually a writer, a column writer for, oh my gosh, I can't think of the name of it. It's called Blog Something. Blog Critics.
See, you're way too, but you're
yes.
stretched thin there,
yes.
Virginia.
It's with Blog Critics. They it's a website where they have different columns. They talk about different things, and I'm supposed to be every month writing on there, and I haven't posted on there in like 3 months as one of the writers. And they emailed me, like, what happened to you? And I'm like, I'm so busy. Yeah, and I'm like, so I'm, like, on hiatus now with them because I told them I'm not sure if I'll be coming back, so they put me on hiatus. But and I like Blog Critics. There's a lot of great information, and that actually gets syndicated out. So being on there was great for me, but again, I think it comes back to what you're saying. You have to, when you're doing this guerrilla marketing, you have to be vested, and you need to pick things that you know you can put the time and energy into, because it takes work to do it.
And quality. I mean, that's something I haven't mentioned too much, but is that all of this, you know, pay attention to it. And the press release and what you put on Facebook, and if you do have a blog, those should be the highest quality you can do. And it's just that most of these, once you've got it down, again, it's just manipulating it a little bit. But a blog, you've got to come up with something new each month. That's tough. I want to get to another topic here, another controversial topic. One of the things I talked about, and on some of these, I think the listeners will notice, it's pretty obvious, that I don't have a firm opinion. I mean, I can see both sides. I do have an opinion, but oftentimes it's not backed up by the best of data. It's very subjective because I haven't seen any studies. And what I want to talk about now, at least...
Well, I just want to quantify that, too, is I think a lot of times what works for one person may not work for another as well.
Because
I think personality comes into play as well.
That's very good, yeah. Another thing is, should I give away free copies of the book? Now, I've read a lot of different opinions on that. Mostly, as a matter of fact, everything that I've talked about here today, I'll give you my email address at the end if that's okay. And people can email me, and I can send them a Word document of this, my whole presentation, because it's got, I don't know, a dozen resources that I quote, that I cite or used for this information, and people can follow up on those and read it from the horse's mouth about where I got some of these ideas.
I want to let our listeners know, it's about 6 to 7 pages long of information.
Yeah.
So a lot of information.
Free copies of the book. Now, I read a lot of things where, particularly like Amazon Select is probably the most well-known, where for a certain period of time, you know, a few days or a week, you can promote your book free, and hopefully you'll sell a whole lot of copies, and this will push you way up in the rankings for whatever subcategory you're in. So you can be in the top 10 or top 100 or number 1 or whatever, and then you can use that as a promotion tool. And a lot of people say that that's a very useful thing to do, and you can promote your book. Other people that I've read say that's just nonsense. If you're one of those food companies that gives away the little samples in Costco, and you go to Costco or any grocery store nowadays, and they'll have little samples of food. And they probably do that thousands of places each day. But that costs them almost nothing in terms of their daily revenue, you know, 0.1% or something. And if you try something and you like it, well, you're going to go back and you're going to be hopefully a regular loyal customer. But if you're giving away your book, yeah, you might get up to number 1 or number 10, and you can use that as a promotion tool. But all of those people that bought the book, the 1,000 that bought it during the 3 days you had it as free, unless you have another book out there, and maybe you do, and that's the smart thing, they're not going to buy it after they've got it for free. And maybe when your next book comes out, they'll wait until it's free also. To me, it becomes kind of this vicious cycle where if you get into the habit of doing that, why would someone want to pay for your work if they can get it for free? And that's kind of the side I fall on. I mean, and a lot of people say, no. The promotion's worth it, then you can do the Facebook posts and Google Plus and say that it's number 1, and that will spur sales. But I have seen a couple of guys who did studies on their own works, actually. They used themselves as guinea pigs, and one guy for a week was offered free, and he sold 2,600 copies of his book. And then after that week, it just flatlined down to almost nothing. So if the idea is that you're going to give them away free, then you're going to promote it because it's such a number 1 seller or number 10, whatever, that it's a bestseller.
Yeah,
it doesn't necessarily work that way. So, and then there's just an emotional thing that I've worked really hard on my books, and the newspaper pieces that I write. I don't want to give it away for free. I just have this emotional problem with this also. But other people, some people swear by it.
And I say, yeah, you're a professional author. You're like, I'm trying to make a livelihood. How do you make a livelihood?
Right.
I'm giving all my stuff away for free. I mean, it is. It is a very emotional situation for a lot of authors. And, you know, we have, we've had on before an author. Her name's Ashley Fontaine, and she has done the Kindle Select program back when it was very, very new. Hardly anybody knew about it. And she did phenomenally well, and she actually made a lot, even after her book wasn't free anymore, by doing Kindle Select. She ended up for a few years making quite a bit of money as an author through Amazon by using that program that has changed since then because now everybody uses it. But when it was brand spanking new, and that's what I think has happened is a lot of people have heard of the people who got on it when it first was introduced, and they did phenomenally well because it was such a new idea that they that they weren't hurt in the pocketbook as much. As now when you have everybody doing it, you know, it's become, like you said, I mean, it's like if you know that you can go to Krispy Kreme Donut and get a free donut, why would you buy the 12, you know, other donuts because you got a free one? You can just come in every day and get a free one versus buy the dozen, right? So, and no, Krispy Kreme doesn't give out free donuts. They used to give out free donuts when they first opened up. At least they did where I was in California. They don't do that anymore. But,
Look. If you've got deep pockets, you can afford to take a loss for a while. Even if it's not a loss or it's such a minuscule amount, to build up a loyalty. But if you only have one or two products or three, and you're giving away one of them for free, you know that's tough. It's not something that people buy every day. You know, once a year they may buy your book. So
and I would say with the free thing, the one thing that I've seen where authors have used the free, I mean, because obviously if you're a company or like a publisher and you have you know, quite a few books in your list that you can do that with, you're not going to get hurt as much as the author themselves. If you're an author trying to do this, the thing I've seen is authors have done the, companion book. So, like, they'll write, like, for example, for children's books authors, you know, be it from YA to picture book, you have your actual book, and then you write, like, a teacher's guide, and you give the teacher's guide away for free. And if they like what they see in the teacher's guide, they may buy the book so they can have it as the companion with it. So now the kids have actually read the story. So, because you make the teacher's guide where you can have the book, but you don't have to have the book kind of thing for it to work.
Right. Well, now, I can see. That makes sense because that's leading into something else. It's not just a one-off kind of thing.
And the other thing I've seen is like, I'll use Marcia, for example. She's going to listen to me. She's going to chuckle. But she has her Virginia Templeton stories. No, not the character Virginia has nothing to do with me, Tom, just so you know. She just named her Virginia. But she has her Virginia Templeton stories, and they're three short stories about this very strong female character.
Uh-huh.
And so she could take that. Now, she has as a compilation book where it's all three stories together. I think it's three stories. Maybe it's four. I think it's three. Where she could take one of those stories and offer it for free and say, but if you want to read the other ones, here's the book. So, or you could do that with like your first. I've seen authors on their websites say, you know, here's the prologue or here's chapter one, and give that away free. And I think that's when it works. But I think you're right. I think, you know, like I have a picture book. So for me to give my picture book away for, I mean, I couldn't do a chapter obviously. So for me to say here's my picture book, well, kind of. I mean, I will be honest, I have given my picture book away for free. But I've usually done because like there's this little kid and they're tormenting their parents. And I'm like, you know, I'd rather have the kid reading and doing something and not tormenting their parents. I'm like, here, just have the book, kid. You know, at least you're reading. You know.
You know, in special cases like those, kind of tying in with free here is that, by all means, give away the book to potential reviewers. I mean, you know, when you write to the newspapers and the media outlets, and you can do it by snail mail and actually send them a copy, or say I can upload you a copy of the ebook, whatever. Yeah, do that. If people are going to, it's kind of a quid pro quo. Hopefully, they're going to do a review. And even if they don't, you're not going to be giving away that many copies. But if it's
author. I see with me when I do it, when I give it to the kids because, you know, we're out at dinner and, like, I have a few books because now I carry them in my purse. And, like, kids, screaming their head off. And my husband's like, oh, I'm so glad we sat over here in the family section because we don't have our kids tonight. I'm like, oh, well, I'll just, like, bring my book over and say, I have a picture book. Do you think – I don't even say it's mine. I'm just like, I have a picture book. Do you think your kid, you know, do you mind if I give this to you guys for your child? And then I'm thinking they're going to go, oh, there's this nice lady. She gave us this book, and this was such a great book.
That makes sense. That I could get behind. Right, exactly. All right. One other thing I wanted to mention, kind of squeeze this in here, is there's a ton of websites, and some of these people may not have actually heard much about, that everyone, every author, particularly the ones into guerrilla marketing, which basically we all should be, should have a presence. And one of the main ones, and here in alphabetical order, but it's probably the main one, is Amazon Author Central. I also belong to LinkedIn. I'll talk about that in a minute. But I have followed discussions on LinkedIn where people will say, if you'll like my Amazon Author Central author page, you know, I'll like yours. So people go back and forth, and you build up the likes in it, that sort of thing. And some people were going, these are published authors. What is Amazon Author Central? Well, go to Amazon. I can't even remember exactly how to do it, but it's simple. And in my...
I want to say, isn't Amazon.com Author Central is all you need to do? Or you can actually just Google Author Central and it pulls
Well, what I've got here is authorcentral.amazon.com. And that'll
there,
take
yeah.
you there, and then you can just fill it out. And you can you put in a profile of yourself. You put in all kinds of information, including keywords and that sort of thing, of
you
your books.
I mean, videos.
It's, yeah, oh, yeah. It's really pretty extensive, and it's, I don't think, as well-known as it should be, but every author should have a presence on that. Some of these others I'm going to go through quickly, but they are, again, in my presentation here and with the URLs linking to the site. So Authors Den is another one. That one you can upload articles. So in the last, I don't know, 7 or 8 months that I've been on it, I'll upload my hiking stories each month. And it's actually people read them and have made comments. It doesn't have to do with my books, but maybe they'll take a look at the books as they're reading the hiking stories. So that's another one.
Well, I was going to say also with the Authors Den, and I know when you mentioned it, and I forgot to send this to you, because you were like, send all the stuff you're mentioning to me when you're doing your presentation. They have where you can if you pay, because you can't do it, because you can have it as a free account or you can pay, and there's like
right.
levels.
All these are free that I'm talking about. Almost all of them also have premium accounts that cost money.
Right. Well, but you can pay a low fee for Authors Den, like their, I don't know, I think it's like their silver, I don't know, like whatever their dirt cheap one is.
Something,
maybe
yeah.
it's bronze, I don't know. But anyways, it's like $5 a month or something like that. But if you do that, then you can actually have a newsletter where people can sign up for your newsletter, which will do what? Build up your contact list.
Right. Yeah, thank you for reminding me. All of these ones that I'm mentioning here are free for their basic service, and I think just about all of them, you can also pay a certain amount each month and have more services. But the basic one is pretty good in all these, so it's something
yeah.
that, again, it's going to take you a little bit of time to get set up, but once you're there, you can add to it when something happens, and it's established. And it's another way that you're getting visible. You're getting your work out there in a visible manner. Another one is Book Daily. One that I came across, which is kind of strange, but you can put up free ads, Creative Designers and Writers, Goodreads, probably most everyone's heard of. That's, you ought to have a presence there. LinkedIn. Now, I happen to like LinkedIn. I belong to about 10 different groups, and some of them are Authors, Writers, Helping Authors, Writers, Book Marketing, Certified Professional Writers Association, Ebook Authors Self-Help Group, Memoir Writers Society, Seasoned Writers, Netting Pros, and others. So you can belong to, there's a ton of writing groups.
I was also add about LinkedIn, because we didn't talk about awards, and we won't have time to. But if you are an author who has won an award, like I have a Mom's Choice Award, they have at LinkedIn groups for all the different awards. If you're a Caldecott winner, you're a Pulitzer Prize nominee,
right.
Mom's
or
Choice
winner.
Award winner, People's Choice, whatever, they have groups
right.
at LinkedIn, and they help with all this promotion as well.
Yeah. I mean, LinkedIn is really good, and I follow a lot of the discussions I have that I'm using in my presentation here I got from discussions at LinkedIn, that people will say this or that about marketing, and some of it's very useful. Another one is the Book Marketing Network, Publish.com, Writers, Agents, and Editors Network, Writing.com. I'm sure there's others, but these are the ones that I belong to. And, again, you get a good review of your book, and you write something up. And that little, the post that you write up, you can use that on every one of these things I've talked about, these websites, You can put it on Twitter, you can put it on Google+, you can put it on Facebook, put it on your website, of course, your blog if you have one. Once you get something, electronic media makes it really easy that you can just cut and paste and put that in all kinds of different places. That these might have different audiences, so you're going to, again, increase your visibility.
Yeah, no, that's true. And I like, you also have Bookmarketing Network, which we use. We use the Bookmarketing Network for the World of Ink Plus. I have my individual one. And what I like about Bookmarketing Network, and I know we talked about this, after you did your presentation, is they have, and I hate saying that because it's called a blog, but it's not a blog like a normal blog. It's where you can put like your press release and stuff, but they actually get syndicated out. I have put stuff on there and have seen it shown up like out in Washington, like in Washington local paper type stuff.
So it basically, like the
little blog that you get as part of your account, which is free at Bookmarketing Network, acts basically like a free press release kind of thing for you, which, you know, site that generates it out to multiple places, which is really, really cool.
Right. Oh, yeah. And actually, you were very generous in sending me some information, and I added another point. It's not on the copy you have, but that there are free press release websites, which also, if people want to email me, I'll send them this this Word document, which has the URLs of the, like, PR.com, 24/7 press release, and press release point, or places where you can have free press releases. So there's a ton of places out there, particularly on the Internet, where you can increase your presence. And it takes a bit to set it up, but once you got it rolling, it's just maintenance, and it's not that big of a deal. And I don't know why everyone doesn't do it.
Yeah, I'm with you on that because, you know, Marsh and I get asked that stuff a lot because of everything we do with the World of Ink. And, I mean, sometimes we do. We spend, you know, hours every day working on stuff just because we have multiple things going on. But I generally try and take, like, one day a week where I'm like, okay, today is my day for my author stuff. Today is my day where I'm doing the World of Ink stuff. And, you know, when I break it out like that and dedicate time, it's very magical to do this type of marketing. It's just like your writing life. I mean, no one wakes up in the morning and just says, well, I'm just going to try and write today. I mean, you can, but, I mean, how? If you think about how productive are you going to be, you know, I'm going to write a book. And you're like, okay, well, are you going to set deadlines? Are you going to set time frames where you write? Because if I don't, I don't know about you, Tom, but if I don't, because I have three kids in my house, my day gets, like right before the show, I was at the Children's Museum with my kids. I'm like, we have to leave by 3 because I have to get to the show. You know, it's easy to get off schedule. So everything definitely is good. I wonder if you can talk about. Go ahead.
Well, it's just once you set it up, you're right. I mean, and you have a schedule. Yeah, take one day. And actually, it used to be a couple hours a day of whatever you want to update, and you can update it similarly on all of these different places. It's not that onerous of a task. It is to get started, and when you look at the 7 pages of things that I suggest, you might go, wow, I never do that. But once you get into it, it becomes kind of a useful project. I mean, it's making your baby, your work, come alive.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the one thing we didn't talk about, which is what you're doing today, is interviews. You know, interviews are important. I mean, and not just once your local paper. I mean, and trust me, the old traditional way of marketing is, by all means, you still need to do those. I think as anything else. But, I mean, Blog Talk Radio, which is where the Writing Mama Show and the World of Ink Network is based, I mean, there are so many different, you know, types of programs like this one, all the way to ones like for you that are political, that I think authors don't think about. I remember one of my first interviews was with Johnny Tan, which I know you know who Johnny Tan is because he came out a couple of years ago and was one of our keynote speakers at the conference.
Right.
But that's how I met him. He had me as a guest on his From My Mama's Kitchen, and I'm like, why would I be on that show? I mean, that just has nothing to do with my picture book. But he wanted to talk about, you know, some of the key things about the importance of family that were in my book that, I mean, it wasn't like I went out to write about. They just happened to be there subtly that he noticed. And because of that, it was perfect for a show. So I think sometimes we overlook things that could, like you're talking about, like you do hiking stuff, and like, well, politicians go hiking, don't they? People who like politics. I mean, my husband's really into politics. He likes to hike. Every night he comes home and goes for a walk. You know,
exactly.
So you're right. I mean, you never know. I think you got to kind of look at things outside of the box when it comes to this kind of marketing, would you say?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And, look, once you get into it, I think, as you've found out, it's enjoyable. I mean, you get to talk about your work, or this is, you know, talking about one aspect of it, the marketing, which is a big part of it. And to get yourself prepared for these things, you have to study up, you have to know more. So you're educating yourself, you're hopefully educating the listeners, you're getting your work out there. These are, you know, it's all good. It's all win, win, win.
Well, I'm glad you've been on the show, and I would love for you to share with where people can find out more about you, obviously a little bit about your books, since we're toward the end of the show, because I, you know, those people who are interested, and trust me, the more I've gotten to know you, I always tell myself I'm an independent. I never really consider myself Republican, even though everybody tries to tell me I am. But I'm starting to think I'm actually more like you, because I'm definitely like you said, some things I'm more like conservative, and some things I'm like, eh, whatever. Each their own.
Yeah, oh,
so I would love for people to go read your book, because I know after I read your book, I started realizing that I didn't know myself politically as well as I thought I did. So even if you're not somebody who is a liberal or think you're a libertarian, you might find things out about yourself politically that you didn't realize at some point.
So, Virginia, will my email be up on the website, or should I give that now, or what? If people want to,
you can give that now, and I can actually add it to on our blog talk. At worldofinknetwork.blogspot.com, I can add it to the show post there, so people can find it.
For all of you people out there in listener land, if you would like a Word document of all the things we've covered, and actually a few that we didn't get to, and references to where you can go to original articles that I use in this presentation, my email address is Tom Garrison, GARRISON, 98 at yahoo.com. You know, all lowercase letters, of course. And just say you want a copy of the Guerrilla Marketing, and I'll send that to you. I don't have any proprietary interest on this. I think this is, reading is a good thing. More people should read more often, and all of us writers should encourage that. And if this can have people read whatever you've written, great. It's a good thing.
And where can they find you and your books as well?
Oh, the easiest thing would just be just put my name in, Tom Garrison, go to Amazon, because there's only one other Tom Garrison who's really published anything, and the guy's an oceanographer. and I think they'll probably find out that that's not me quickly. Why are the two kind of political books?
And then, of course, your book is Why We Left the Left, right?
Well, one is called Why We Left the Left. It's personal stories by leftist liberals who evolved to embrace libertarianism. It's 23 stories, including my own, of people that I found on the internet by doing, you know, saying, hey, has this happened to you in your life? And I got 23 pretty much just normal people. I mean, there are school teachers, a couple of moms who don't have full-time jobs, students, editors, a firefighter, guys, the CEO of a company, environmentalists, all kinds of people. And they said, yeah, that's kind of my life story. And so it's really neat in that some of these people, one college professor particularly, very analytical, very intellectual about his move from a leftist to a libertarian. And then you have other people who it's a couple of life experiences that happened that got them to questioning the role of government and how big government should be, that sort of thing. So it's this mix of very intellectual, very based in personal experiences. Myself, I was a pretty hardcore Marxist, and at one point, over several years, I just started seeing the light and I left the dark side. So now I'm a libertarian, love freedom. And the other book is called Challenge Authority, Memoir of a Baby Boomer, because probably the thing that's common throughout my whole life is, from being a kid, is challenging authority. And not in a way that's just being obnoxious and and calling cops pigs and things like that, but being serious about it and wondering about why things are, maybe challenging the status quo. That's been a real strong theme throughout my life, so it kind of fits the title.
And I appreciate that, by the way, because you do. Even before the show started, you asked me a few questions, and I love that about you, that you do question things, that you have no problem being the devil advocate. Even if you agree with somebody on their side, you're just like, well, did you look at it from this point of view? And I love that about you. It makes you very – well, no, I mean, when you form an opinion, I mean, you're forming a very educated opinion. It's not like you just decided because you emotionally feel that way that that's just how it's going to be, and I love that. and that comes across in all your writing that you do, so that's a good thing.
I hope so. I was trained by some really good people when I was an undergraduate and in graduate school who took teaching seriously, and it wasn't so, tribalism like politics is now. One of the guys, this was a budding little socialist, right? My mentor, one of them, when I was an undergraduate, was a conservative Republican political scientist. But he's a guy who, up until he died last year, I had maintained ties with him for 40 years. And this guy was a friend. We were very different politically, but we got along. And it never turned emotional or nasty or anything. We just, you know, trying to understand things.
Well, that's great. Well, thank you, Tom, for taking the time out today and being on the show. Hopefully some of our stories still... Yeah, it's been great. It's been really great. And hopefully some of our local authors that I let know you're going to be on the show tuned in today. And, you know, I know our listeners that do tune into this show. We do it once a month, or try to at least. It's a lot of great information, and it's definitely one that we'll get featured up at Blog Talk Radio. So thank you for coming on today. It's been great.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity. This was fun.
You're welcome. And I just want to let our listeners know again one more time some of the upcoming shows. We have this coming Friday, the Empowerment Show with Irene Roth. She will be talking about the importance of empowering our teens and how to build those lines of communication between adults to the teenagers, be it parent, guardian, teacher, mentor, and that will be at 6 p.m. Eastern Time this Friday. And then Bennett Pomerantz is back for Saturday's show, Another Anything Goes. That will be at 9 p.m. Eastern. He has 5 guests on that show. It's a 90-minute open discussion and chat. You're more than welcome to join in on the conversation through Twitter, Facebook, the live chat room, and, of course, calling in. It's called Anything Goes because you never know what subject topics are going to come up on that show. And then I will be back again on Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time for the Stories for Children show. We'll be talking about summer reading programs and educational programs. I will be joined by Rebecca Kelly from the YMCA. She is the National Director of the Achievement Gap Incentives for the Y, and we'll be talking about things that are offered through the Y in various communities and, of course, how to find, if you don't have a YMCA, those type of programs in your community. And we thank you all for listening to the World of Ink Network here on Blog Talk Radio and the What If Success Show. Have a great night. Bye-bye.
Follow me to the World of Ink.